Hello from CC.
I'm so excited to announce an all-new class called Starting It Right, which is all about how to begin your story in the best place and in the best way. Now, this is going to be a 4-day class, so come prepared to take lots of notes. We'll cover the different types of beginnings and how to choose the best one for your story, how to frame your inciting incident in a compelling way, common mistakes writers make when starting a story, how to balance exposition and mystery, how to make readers connect with your protagonist, and how to make the reader want to turn to the next chapter, and so much more. And guess what? For the first time ever, there will be an interactive component to my class. Everyone who is registered will have the option of sending in the opening scene of their work for a chance to be critiqued during the webinar. Writers of all categories and genres are invited to attend, and there are limited spots. So if you're interested, sign up now. And don't worry if you can't attend one or more live sessions because the recording will be sent to everyone who is registered. This class will begin on March 20th, and like I said, will go on for 4 days. For more details, check out the link in my bio on Instagram. I hope to see you there.
Would you like to do some good in the world while also standing in line to win amazing literary prizes? Of course you would. I'm hosting a fundraiser for a cause that's close to my heart, which is literacy in South Africa. The Masana Library Project aims to make the future of South African learners brighter by improving their education and supplying a South African high school with the kind of basic resources that we take for granted in North America. Of course, there are a host of amazing literary prizes up for grabs if you donate to this wonderful cause. They include developmental edits, coaching packages, manuscript critiques, and so much more. To learn more about the cause, as well as the prizes and our brilliant and generous sponsors, head to biancamaray.com and go to the fundraiser tab. Entries close at 8 a.m. Eastern Time on the 10th of April, after which the lucky winners will be announced. Hi there, and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm Bianca Murray, and I'm joined by Carly Waters and Cece Lira from PS Literary Agency. Today's guest is the queer Floridian author of With Teeth, a novel, which was a finalist for the Lambda Literary Award in Fiction, and the New York Times bestselling debut novel, Mostly Dead Things, which was also a finalist for the Lambda Literary Award in Fiction, and was shortlisted for the VCU Cabal First Novelist Award. She was awarded a Shearing Fellowship at Black Mountain Institute, has held residencies at Ragdale Foundation, Vermont Studio Center, the Malay Colony, and the studios of Key West, and was longlisted for the Joyce Carol Oates Prize. She runs the Substack Dad Lessons. Her work has appeared at the New York Times, Time, Vogue, The Cut, Oprah Magazine, PBS NewsHour, The Guardian, Salon, The Washington Post, and elsewhere. She has a master's in library and information science from Florida State University and lives in Orlando, Florida. It's my pleasure to welcome Kristen Onnette. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to get to speak to you because this book is unlike so many books, and I know you are going to be unlike so many authors I speak to. So before we dive into our interview, one thing that I do want to tell our listeners, I know many of you listen while you have children in the car and you're ferrying them backwards and forwards and play groups and all kinds of things. We're kind of putting an adult content warning on this episode because I'm not quite sure where things are going to go. And I love that about this. So don't say you haven't been warned, okay? Two, those of you who are watching on our YouTube channel will see the cover of the book that I'm holding up. It's Stop Me If You've Heard This One. Awesome, awesome cover. And I'm going to read you the flap copy to give you some context. Cherry Hendrix is a professional clown who creates zany fun all over Orlando. She's constantly hustling until she meets Margot the Magnificent, a much older lesbian magician who seems to have worked out the lines between art, business, and life, and who is sexy as hell. It's not long before Cherry must decide how much she's willing to risk for Margot and for her own explosive new act and what kind of clown she wants to be. Equal parts bravado, tenderness, and humor, and bursting with misfits, magicians, and mimes, Stop Me If You've Heard This One is a masterpiece of comedic fiction that asks big questions about art, friendship, and community, and the importance of timing in jokes and in life. Right, so Kristen, Mostly Dead Things had taxidermists in it, right? And now you have clowns and an exotic pet store. I was sitting thinking you must have led the world's most interesting life ever to be able to write about these things authentically, until I saw that master's in library and information science and figured, okay, this woman has researched the shit out of these topics. So can you take us through that, please?
Absolutely. I would say that being a librarian has 100% affected the way that I approach fiction in my writing career. I genuinely love doing research. So anytime I get like obsessed with a topic or excited about a topic, my brain immediately is like pings. And I'm like, oh, yay, I get to do a ton of research now. So with this book in particular, I'd already done a lot of research about taxidermy because that was not something I'd ever done before for my first novel. And that was a specific kind of research too. It was like a lot of like taxidermy manuals, a lot of like YouTube videos about things that probably like if somebody had come up behind me on the reference desk when I was working at the library would have worried I was a serial killer. But for this, it was, I mean, maybe they would also be worried I was a serial killer if they came up behind me looking up clown videos. I was looking up a lot of different things about different kinds of clowning, because I think that's another thing that gets me really excited about research when I start researching something and I discover that there's so much more to know than I originally had thought. So for looking up things about clowning, I started off knowing I wanted to have somebody who was a birthday party clown. And I'm like, okay, I know what that entails. At least I thought I did. You know, I'm like, I understand that it includes, you know, balloon animals, the kind of clothes that you would wear, like a set time of arrival and a kind of payment and like, you know, silk scarves, maybe a little magic, stuff that's like very simplistic and fun for kids at a birthday party. And then when I started doing a lot of research into clowns, I'm like, oh, there's so many more different kinds of clowning than I had assumed. And also a very large community of people who do clowning and are very serious about it. So it was something where I was like, I need to be like incredibly respectful while I'm looking at this kind of research, because people are serious about it and they get very offended very easily. Because it's like, I mean, it's a profession where people shit on it a lot. People are like, this is like something that's not taken seriously, but the people who are genuinely in clowning do it because they care a lot and it's art for them. And I was like, oh, living in Orlando and a place where people consider it's a tourist industry here. People come to use your resources and it's a center for hospitality and then they leave and they consider you tacky when they're the ones that came here to enjoy what we have. It's something where I was like, oh, this fits like right into things I really care about when I'm working. So it was like researching how, yeah, still that same stuff about how to make balloon animals, but also was doing a lot of research into like comedic timing, how do jokes work? How does humor sit inside of situations like inside of clowning, but also like looking up like how stand-up comedians would do stuff, look up how drag and performance arts, like these things all are like putting on a persona. So it ended up being like really sprawling kind of research that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. And the more you know, the more you realize you know nothing as you go along, which is why research can sometimes be a stalling tactic to get started. I think for a lot of writers, we use it as procrastination. It's like, oh, I don't quite know everything yet, so I'm not going to write it. So that's something we need to guard against. But, you know, I've always fallen into the category of people who are terrified of clowns. Since I was a child, it's not that horror movies have done it for me. I'm like Phoebe Buffay. There's nothing scarier than a clown. And then you give us Cherry, who doesn't want to do anything else. She hustles her ass off to be a clown, to live this life. And you gave me that like aha moment as to why somebody would want to do this and how it makes her feel in a way connected to her late brother, who was considered the funny one in the family, and how for some people, clowning is an attempt to deal with trauma or loss as well. Can you tell us how you climbed into Cherry's skin like that? And at what particular point or part of the draft did you authentically feel like you were Cherry?
That's a really good question. I think part of this process for me is when I began the idea for this book, I sat and thought about it for a whole year before I ever put pen to paper. I was like, I want to be so ready to sit down with this particular person and be very much in their head that I was like, I can't fuck this up. I was like, I need to be thinking about who she is, what she wants, the kind of like voice she has. Cause I also knew I wanted it to be a very voicey first person kind of book, because like, I wanted it to sound like somebody really funny next to you, a funny stranger next to you at the bar. You're having the best night because they're just so funny. And I was like, that's the voice and the vibe I want. And so I thought about it for a whole year. And I had like a little Word document that I put, like if I was like, I can't forget this. Like when I came up with like Aquarium Select 3, I was like, this is such a great like other like side job for her to have, side hustle, that I need to remember what this is. So I put that in, or I put like little, maybe a little joke I thought up that I wanted to remember to put in. But for the most part, I thought about clowns, clowning. I collected a lot of like images and memes and videos because that's like what I was more interested in having. I wanted it to be like a full scale like clown car inside of my head, maybe. I wanted it to be like that before I ever touched a page. And then it was about a year and I woke up one morning and I was like, I'm ready. I'm ready to sit down. I knew exactly how I was going to start this book. I knew the first chapter was going to go, because I'm not a person who outlines. I really just kind of go for it. And so I sat down and as I was writing and I was like, there she is. Like she was right there. And I know so much of this was because I waited truly a full calendar year before I was like, I'm going to write her story. And I was like, her voice was immediately there. I knew the exact kind of person she was. Like, she's a mess, but she's like not messy when it comes to her work for the most part, because she cares so deeply about this thing. I knew like where she was in the scheme of like being in Orlando. I knew like who her friends were going to be. I knew like the kind of relationship she was going to have with her parents. I knew like the kind of way she was going to feel about her brother. And then there were still like fun surprises for me as I was writing, like things that popped out that I wasn't anticipating, because that's what makes writing a draft fun for me. I feel like if I'm bored writing something, that the reader is going to be incredibly bored. So this was a book where I had the most joyful time writing it. And I think that, like, to answer your question, I think that's when I knew that I had her, because I felt so, even though it's a book that deals with grief and loss and trauma, it's a book that's so completely joyful and like, still like is looking at this kind of, I mean, to use a cliche phrase, like glass half full situation. Like no matter how many times like the world kind of crushes her down, she's like, I'm getting back up. I'm dusting off my clown shoes. I'm going back out there. I'm going to work for the thing that I feel so strongly about, and that thing is like art for her, and for her art is clowning. And so I feel like as I was writing and felt that kind of joy working through it, that's when I was like, her voice is here, and this is going and doing what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it's amazing. And a lot of people think it's so easy to do that in the first person voice. They're like, oh, it's in the first person, so it's easy to capture the voice. But sometimes it's so difficult, because it's like, where does your voice as the author end, and where do you allow Cherry's voice to begin? And so it isn't always that simple. It's so easy to interject the whole time, putting yourself into the story, and it's her story and you've got to let her run with it. She felt so authentic to me. She felt like that messy kind of friend who you have so much fun with, but you just sometimes want to grab them and be like, get your shit together, man. Like, come on, like get your shit together. But you still love them because they're so lovable and they're just amazing. And yeah, she just felt so authentic to me. So we often talk on the podcast about how you need to surprise your readers, how it's so important in opening pages, especially to surprise people, to give them some kind of jolt. And nobody has done it better than Kristen has in this book. So we're going to just hear a word from our sponsors first, and then I'm going to get her to read some of those pages to you. And once again, I'm giving you that adult content warning, okay? All right, here's a word from our sponsors.
Part of our life's journey is experiences and working on our self-betterment. An experience I've been counting down the days to is taking our kids to France this summer. I've never met an almond croissant I didn't like, and I can't wait to show the kids a new part of the world. Plus, I can't wait for them to see what their French language education can do for them and the doors it can open. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. My husband and I are going to focus on Rosetta Stone together, so we're ready for vacation and to set a good example for the kids culturally, because learning the language of where you're traveling to is a sign of respect. We can't always assume people speak English. They are trusted experts for 30 years with millions of users in 25 languages offered. That's Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many more. There's fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in so many ways. There are no English translations, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. It's an intuitive process, picking up language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. They have speech recognition, a built-in true accent feature giving you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient with flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with the app or on your desktop at your schedule. There's amazing value. That's lifetime membership for all 25 languages, for all trips and languages needed in life. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. It's a steal. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. The Shit About Writing listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today.
Okay, and we're back. Right, so will you please read us the first sort of 2.5 pages, Kristen?
Yeah, happily. So this opening chapter is called Cold Open. You can tell a joke one of two ways. One, open your mouth and say the damn thing. Two, wait for someone else to try and tell it for you. The second way is almost always funnier. People don't want to hear a punchline. They want to feel like they've beaten you to it. Pretend you're dumber than the audience, at least at first, and suddenly you've got them eating from the palm of your hand. The real gag is waiting behind the scenes, tucked neatly inside the fake out. It's an actual diamond ring disguised as a gaudy cubic zirconia. I'm telling this to the woman from the birthday party, but she's not listening. Her eyes have that faraway look, sleepy with desire, lips part to reveal a slip of tongue and a back tooth gone inky with rot. I've got her up on the sink, underwear pulled down. She's jiggling her legs rapidly, knees knocking together because I'm taking too long. She's been after it since she opened the front door and found me waiting on her porch. Listen, I've been busy. For the past 2.5 hours, I've entertained her 6-year-old son, Danny, in his entire first grade class in her sprawling suburban Central Florida backyard. I've built zoo animals from stringy, multi-hued balloons and pulled never-ending scarves from the ends of my belt sleeves. The bulbous yellow daisy on my lapel has shot water at the woman's husband, soaking the neck of his expensive Ralph Lauren polo. I've thrown a whipped cream pie into the moon of a child's upturned face and spritz seltzer at an elderly schnauzer who took my rented pant leg between its tiny razor teeth and yanked until the hem unraveled. Come on, she says, voice breathy and impatient. Hurry. There's a swath of black hairs lining the top of her right ankle, a sprawl of red dots climbing the inside of her bare thigh from a shaving rash. She kicks free of her underwear and almost knees my nose off in the rush to get naked. I reach up to right it, smearing a lick of grease paint on my gloved fingertips. I'll have to wash them with dish soap right when I get home or else they'll stain. I tell her this, but she doesn't care about that either. We've got 10 minutes, she says, which means we've got less time than that. I keep my clothes on because that's what she wants. The baggy polka dot blazer, the orange striped shirt and gold bow tie, the purple spangled suspenders, my oversized parachute pants with their lines of glittery silver thread outlining the sperm-shaped squiggles of bright neon green. My shiny red shoes are long enough to bang into the side of the toilet bowl as I wrench off her blouse. Buttons plink onto the black and white tiled floor. Finally, she wraps her legs around my waist, feet bouncing against my back as I slip off a glove with my teeth so I can slide my fingers inside her. She looks away from my bare hand, not wanting to see anything that's not clown. She's paying for clown and has wanted clown since she called the agency's number 2 months earlier to plan her son's birthday party. She stares hungrily at my painted face, the wide slick of paint that surrounds my mouth, the black and indigo triangles that shape my eyes, the iconic red foam nose that holds my overly hot breath inside its spongy interior. The wig I wear is powder blue, curls springy and cute, like a deranged Shirley Temple who just got back from Burning Man. Atop the wig sits a tiny rhinestone and suede cowboy hat that I picked up one afternoon at a pet shop, which is now a staple of my clowning gear. I'm Bunko, a rodeo clown who's terrified of horses, goes over great with kids. So we're going to skip ahead where they're having a lovely time together and it gets interrupted. One more solid push and my pants finally tear. Someone grabs my leg and yanks off one of my oversized shoes as I slither through the opening. I fall forward into the brazingly hot Florida afternoon, landing face first in a thatch of bougainvillea. My blazer snags on the thorns as I roll free, knocking into a pair of garbage bins. It's always the jokes that go off the rail that work best, I think, as my own shoe flies from the open window and whacks me hard in the neck. The beauty of it stuns me for a moment, and I stand in the sunshine and watch the shoe roll down the hill and land in a nearby flower bed, squashing a clutch of fuchsia peonies. "You fucking clown," the woman's husband yells it again in case I missed it the first time. "You goddamn fucking clown." He chucks a shampoo bottle at my head. I duck and it smacks into the side of the garbage bin, Pantene spurting from the broken lid. I take off down the street at a gallop, abandoning my clown kit in the middle of the couple's living room. It's full of stuff I need for work, $150 worth of makeup and gear, and as I'm running for my life, I realize that the man isn't wrong. The punchline's sitting right there. I am a literal fucking clown.
Oh, man, that chapter had me laughing so hard. And you know what? After reading this chapter, I immediately knew that you're an essayist. Without me having done any research, I was like, okay, you're an essayist because of how you bring us back full circle to that opening statement with that closing. It's like the punchline of a joke. Can you give our listeners any advice about writing fiction this way and, you know, how advisable it is sometimes to use that kind of essay structure within chapters?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where when I'm writing fiction, especially a novel work, I would say it works a little differently for me in short fiction versus novel work. Like those two things like operate differently in my head. For instance, in a short story, I kind of know it's like an image for me. I describe it usually as like a snow globe. Whatever's contained in there, like sits neatly inside of it, and there's not anything on the outside. That story sits in there. But for a novel, right, it's expansive. It's a much bigger world. It bursts out of the snow globe. It's like living, it's spilled everywhere. So if I'm thinking about, especially like developing a chapter and like what sits inside of a chapter that still is connective tissue to the rest of the body of work, I know that it needs to start at a place and not necessarily conclude, but stop at a place that feels still contained, but holistic to the rest of the book. So this book in particular, structure becomes a thing for me. I think of it in terms of shape. So each book I've done has felt like a particular shape. My first novel, Mostly Dead Things, felt a little like sewing. I had alternating chapters where like the past and the present was like in a linear line going straight forward like a stitch. And the past is like how the past usually presents, right? Where we don't get to choose when we remember something. So memories come piecemeal all over the place and something triggers it. And that felt like the jagged kind of stitch. And they're overlaid on top of each other. It felt like sewing, which matched up with taxidermy. This book to me felt like the trajectory of a joke. I wanted each chapter to feel like its own bit, like its own thing. And so how do we work a joke, right? Like a joke needs to start at a place, a recognizable place to draw the listener in, or the reader in this case. It starts at a recognizable place and then goes into a direction and then suddenly veers off course to surprise, right? Because so much of the enjoyment of a joke is the surprise that still holds the integrity of the original thing. And then conclusion is still like pulling down from that and traces back to the origin. So each chapter for me in this book, I was like, even though it's telling a holistic story over the course of the novel, I want each chapter to be its own joke. So each chapter is its own different title for each one. That's kind of like a jokey bit. And each is doing its kind of own thing. And so I would say that that's like, stylistically, like maybe you're not doing that, right? Like you're not necessarily writing a joke book for yourself, but you can still think like, what is the shape of the project I'm making? I worked at a Tin House summer workshop with like Sam Chang, who heads up like Iowa Writers Workshop. And she is always constantly like, if she's working with anybody in workshops, she's like, you need to tell me what shape this is. If you don't know the shape of it, your reader doesn't understand it either. And then people get lost inside the structure. So for myself, I kind of sit and think like, what is the shape of this? And I think thinking about shape can really help you to be like, here's where I need to start. And here's where I need to like kind of wind up. And it helps it feel a little holistic and hold everything. Like you don't want it to feel open-ended. Because I think, right, like some people are like, I have good starts, but like, harder conclusions, or someone's like, I do a great job at the conclusion and I have a harder at the start. But if you think of those things as connective tissue throughout, that they have to touch each other, then that's going to help you in terms of like keeping that tight and making sure that they touch each other and make a good fun story and help with a surprise.
Yeah. Talking about structure, somewhere where it was really obvious how well you had done this was sort of in the middle of the book, page 99, we've got Margot the Magnificent. So finally, Cherry has her moment with Margot. And the structuring here was incredible. So firstly, you move from the first person voice into the second person voice. As opposed to I, Cherry is speaking in the second person, right? And the way these chapters are structured is the way a magician would do things. So you have one chapter called Appearance, then Levitation, then Mentalism, then Penetration, Restoration, Transformation, Transposition, and Vanishing. And this kind of explains like how these two come together and what happens between them. And you frame that all in the way of a magician's act. And I love the intentionality and the deliberateness that was brought here, because this is what we're always saying, whatever you do, do it with intentionality. So can you speak a bit about that?
Yeah, that was something where it was a fun surprise for myself as I was working, because I love surprises, as I said, when I'm writing. I love to get to a point where I'm like, oh, this is going to happen. Great, because that feels so fun for me. And this was one where when I arrived at it, as I was writing through, I knew that I wanted this to be different. I was like, this is kind of the middle of the book. I really want this to be about magic. I want this to be about these two women coming together and what that looks like. And I was like, I need it to be Cherry's voice, but I also need it to not be Cherry's voice, because she's so voicey and she takes up so much space on the page that I was like, that's not what this chapter is about. This chapter is about like the intimacy of these two coming together and like what magic happens. And I was like, it's also about the magician. It's not about the clown right here. So I was like, it needs to have a different structure. It needs to have a different tone. And as soon as I started writing, I went into second person and I was like, okay, this is the surprise for myself. This is going to be second person. I also was like, the shape of it is going to look different because it's not necessarily the clown story anymore. It's the magician's connection. And so I was like, these are going to be these little headlined bits, and they're going to be like little things. And it's going to include like their interlude together, but it's also going to include this very specific kind of magic show that's happening and how intense and how important and how mysterious and how awe-inspiring it is. And I was like, I want it to have a different tone. I want it to look different. It needs to have second person. So it naturally came together. And as I was talking with my editing crew and we started doing copy edits, they wanted to smash all these together into one chapter. And I was like, I need you guys to not do that. I was like, these need to be on their own pages. They need to feel like chapter breaks. And I know they're short, but that's purposeful. I need these breaths in between. So that was like the intentionality for these was like, I need the white space in between on the page. So each thing can feel like its own very specific kind of part of the magic act. And if it's crushed together, it's not going to give you that same feeling as of like space in the page, turn the page, new. And I was like, I need the headlines to all be bold. I need them all to feel like that. And that was something I was very adamant about. But this was it was one where I reached it. I wrote it in a day and changed like next to nothing. And I knew exactly what I needed to do when I got there. And again, it was so fun to write, but it's probably the one chapter I wrote where it wasn't the same kind of, you know, how I described it as like, this was like a joyful process of writing. This was like, I felt like so intrigued. It felt mysterious and sexy. Felt like Margot, like the magician. It felt like Margot's vibe. And so I felt like it felt very deeply intense. And it was like such a fun process because it was so different than the rest of the book. And it felt perfectly placed to me as well, because I have other chapters that are trying out some different things, right? Like with shape or structure. But this one very specifically, I was like, you're going to hit the middle of this book and it's going to be magic. And then we're going to go back into the clown. And so that was purposeful and intentional in terms of like, as soon as I started it, I knew what I needed to do to make that sound like that, but then also got to be very surprising for me because I didn't know what that was going to look like. I knew it would be different, but I was like, let's try some stuff out. And it just really worked like immediately. And it was fun to write, but in a completely different kind of way, I think.
Yeah. When that happens, it almost feels like you're channeling something, you know, something beyond yourself. That's when writing for me becomes mystical. You know, it's coming from inside you, but because you haven't planned it, this thing's just coming, you know, into your fingertips as you're busy writing it, and you're just like, oh, this is marvelous. And I'm so glad that you pushed back at the editors, because I think so much in writing, we're like, oh, editors know best. And so especially emerging authors or debut authors will be like, oh, okay, fine, I'm going to do that because you know best. But this worked so brilliantly. We needed each of those mini chapter headings. We needed those breaks, exactly as you said. So let this be a lesson for our listeners that, you know, we have to listen a lot of the time to edit and to polish and to make something better. But there are instances where we really have to hold firm and stick to the courage of our convictions. I just wanted to read this one section, page 12 and 13, for our listeners to show you the kind of masterful ways you can give the reader a shortcut into a character's insight. And it doesn't have to be paragraphs and paragraphs and pages. Have a look at what Kristen does here. Your name's Cherry. She sniffles hard. That's exotic. Not really. My name is actually Cheryl, but nobody except my mother has called me that since I moved out at 18. Cherry is a good time, a person who owns a muscle car and drinks straight gin and parties till 3 a.m. Cheryl is the name of the person who does taxes for a living and drives a sensible buff-colored sedan. Cheryl is Nancy's letdown of a daughter, Dwight's disappointing younger sister who was never as funny or as cool or as smart as he was, but Cherry belongs only to herself and she's beyond fine with that. That was just a masterstroke in like shortcut, immediately getting the reader to know exactly who this character is while giving backstory and while giving context.
Yeah, that was because I knew right away who she was. And it was something too where, because right in scene, like, because she's a clown too. These are all personas because her clown persona is Bunko, something she puts on. And then she's like, now this is what I am. But also, her persona is Cherry, right? So I was like, okay, like what, and this is a very deeply, I think, human thing, right? What's the kind of like person we put on when we're going into work, when we're going on a date, when we're talking to our kids, when we're talking to our boss, when we're talking to a friend? Like, what are the kind of like things that we put on and like want to be and act like? And some of this is subconscious and a lot of it is unconscious behavior, but it's all very deeply human. So I think what helps me when I'm trying to get right, because there's tricks and tips we can do for trying to see like what, you know, like what does a person kind of look like without being like she stopped in front of a mirror and assessed her like face and like what she was wearing, you know, it can be as much as like interaction with one other person and what that sets off in you. So sometimes I'm like, how is this interaction that a character is having with another character, be it someone they know as well, someone they don't know at all, someone that's an acquaintance, someone's a coworker, how does an interaction with them help them from a beat or a moment think something about themselves? And it doesn't need to be a lot. I think a little can go a long way. And I'll try that out in different places, usually in a project. And there's some stuff that like sticks and stuff that I end up going through in a draft and deleting because I'm like, this is enough. Like, we already know this about her, or we don't need that part. Like, it's like superfluous. Like, it makes the text kind of slow down. It feels tacky, like sticky. So this was one where I was like, this is just enough. And then later on in the chapter, she has an interaction with like her best friend, Darcy, who she works with. And she has like a different thought process of herself within that moment, you know? So I'm like, who she is, like thinking about like what the stranger has to say about her name that she's given herself, right? It makes her think about the ways in which like this other person that she was before doesn't serve her. Then the ways in which like when she's interacting with her best friend, what's the version of the person that she is right then when she's with her best friend, and get a little bit of that there. And I think like putting these in, like kind of peppering them throughout like a novel, and you can do this in a short story too, but it's harder. You have to be like way more selective, I think, and be so, so purposeful, like exacto knife slice. But with a novel, you can be more playful. You have so many characters that you can bounce off of and be like, you know, like, how do they interact with a server at a restaurant? Who are they at a bar when they're having a drink? Like these kind of things, and like how they can think for pop into their head for a moment, because we all do this. It's like such a deeply human response. And it's fun. It's a way to get to know a character without feeling like you're flooding the reader with like information overload or taking them too far out of scene. Because I always try and be mindful of that. A note that I've like had taped to my computer probably for like 5 years, maybe longer. Oh my God. Maybe like 8 years is like, the present needs to be just as interesting as the past. Because I think we have a propensity as people, like nostalgia is like a dangerous weapon. And we like the past, even in our characters, like this is something we bring as people into our fiction writing, where we'll take our characters out of scene because the past and a memory that they're interested in is like shinier, more interesting. And it's so funny to me. I think that's a fascinating thing because it's interesting to us as people. So we bring that baggage into our characters. And so I'm always like, in scene needs to be just as important, if not more important, than whatever memory that they're thinking about. The memory can pop up, but only if it supports what's happening in the present timeline. Otherwise, it like I think it can make it like bottom heavy and your reader can get lost. So I think like these small little moments are like, insert and then like pop back out again so you can stay in the scene and stay like very present is important to me when I'm going through a draft.
Yeah. I mean, every first person narrator is intrinsically unreliable, right? The minute you have a first person narrator, the person's going to tell you what they want to tell you, and they've got blind spots about themselves, which if you write in the third person, you can give the reader insight into that character's blind spots, which a character can't do themselves in first person. But when you drop that little thing there, we get something that they maybe wouldn't have told us otherwise about themselves because it's too hard, it's too difficult to think about, but it makes them more reliable to us because we gain that kind of insight into them. So Kristen, I've taken up so much of your time. Thank you so, so much for this amazing chat. For our listeners, I'm linking to the book on our bookshop.org affiliate page. If you buy it there, you support an independent bookstore and you support the podcast at the same time. Stop me if you've heard this one. It's amazing. Rush out and get it. So much to learn. Thanks again, Kristen.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
And that's it for today's episode. I hope you'll join us for next week's show. In the meantime, keep at it. Remember, it just takes one yes.
Hello from CC. I'm so excited to announce an all-new class called Starting It Right, which is all about how to begin your story in the best place and in the best way. Now, this is going to be a 4-day class, so come prepared to take lots of notes. We'll cover the different types of beginnings and how to choose the best one for your story, how to frame your inciting incident in a compelling way, common mistakes writers make when starting a story, how to balance exposition and mystery, how to make readers connect with your protagonist, and how to make the reader want to turn to the next chapter, and so much more. And guess what? For the first time ever, there will be an interactive component to my class. Everyone who is registered will have the option of sending in the opening scene of their work for a chance to be critiqued during the webinar. Writers of all categories and genres are invited to attend, and there are limited spots. So if you're interested, sign up now. And don't worry if you can't attend one or more live sessions because the recording will be sent to everyone who is registered. This class will begin on March 20th and, like I said, will go on for 4 days. For more details, check out the link in my bio on Instagram. I hope to see you there.
Would you like to do some good in the world while also standing in line to win amazing literary prizes? Of course you would. I'm hosting a fundraiser for a cause that's close to my heart, which is literacy in South Africa. The Masana Library Project aims to make the future of South African learners brighter by improving their education and supplying a South African high school with the kind of basic resources that we take for granted in North America. Of course, there are a host of amazing literary prizes up for grabs if you donate to this wonderful cause. They include developmental edits, coaching packages, manuscript critiques, and so much more. To learn more about the cause, as well as the prizes and our brilliant and generous sponsors, head to biancamaray.com and go to the fundraiser tab. Entries close at 8 a.m. Eastern Time on the 10th of April, after which the lucky winners will be announced.